So to answer the question of what did Aiden Kyrus learn just before his death and about who was responsible for the destruction of the Halcyon Vale, I put that it was the builders of the Halcyon Vale who installed dangerous alien technology on the ship were responsible for the disaster.
So I guess it was Marina Kane. Marina Kane all
classic,
along, y'all.
Classic engineer shit.
We never stopped to ask if we should.
I think even though it's a dark scene and it's like tonally dark, I think I'm going to characterize it as light, actually. And the reason for that is I think that learning, like, the knowledge that it was actually an accident, right? And that it wasn't, you know, even though it's bad that we like mess with the technology and maybe there was a cover up or who knows, right? But I think the fact that it was like not humans intentionally killing other humans, and that that was the, you know, maybe there's other things going on, like the assassin trying to prevent, maybe they're trying to prevent that knowledge from getting out, right? And maybe there's something bigger going on now. But I think that that information and him sharing that, right, that's I think that is a positive. And, you know, maybe Emma completes the mission. So maybe not, who knows? We'll have to play to find out. So now that I've gone for a second time, that's the last part of this focus. But there's one more step before we finish, and that's something that's called legacies. After the end of each focus, the player to the right of, or kind of behind in the order of the current lens, gets to pick a legacy. If you're adding a new legacy, which at the start of the game, all of them will be, that has to be something specific that happened in the history during the last focus. And the legacy can draw attention to that, and then it also lets that player add either an event or a narrated scene to the timeline. And a narrated scene just means one that we don't play out. They just dictate what occurs and what the outcome is. The legacy is essentially something you think is interesting and that you as the player want to keep in the spotlight and that we might revisit in later rounds of play. Each player can only have one legacy, and if they add a new legacy, it means that they replace their old one, though any scenes or events that came from it will still remain on the timeline. So Haley, because you are to my right in the circle order that we're in on this chat, you can go ahead and select the first legacy. And so you can take a minute, think about what has occurred during the last focus and if there's something you want to draw attention to. And again, it doesn't have to be like a specific, the name of an event or scene, but just something in those or something that we added to the history during that last focus.
So just to clarify, I name a legacy, and then right now I get to add an event or scene, narrated scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens afterward?
Then we'll move on to the next focus, the next lens.
And then what happens to that legacy?
That will remain on the board until you choose to replace it. And essentially, anytime okay. It's your turn as the person that's picking the legacy, you would either say, I want to keep that and I want to add another card, or I want to replace it and put something else on.
So does it have to be from the last focus round, or it can't be from the first pass round?
It's got to be something that we added to the history in the last round. But it could be something of, like, it just has to be something that we added.
It doesn't have to be something that's on the board. It's something correct. That we could have talked about or touched on.
Correct. As long as it's specific. It can't be, like, general, like, evacuations, right? That's not enough.
Okay.
It could be like ships we use for evacuations. You know what I mean? That could be that specific enough.
I think a thread that we did not really get to play out a lot was what was Nadia's motivation for being on Aiden Kyrus' ship and causing his assassination. So I want it to be something about the pro-Shepherd faction. Is that a good legacy?
I think it could be topic? Yeah, so it's like the legacy would be the sympathizers with the shepherds within mm-hmm. humanity, or the sympathizers of the shepherds within humanity.
The sympathizers of the shepherds.
May chaos take the world.
And then now I have to add an event or a scene, narrated scene.
Yeah, it related to that.
I think when in the period of humankind grappling with the reveal of sapient life, which we said was a light period, I think there is a dark event there which is the emergence of a semi-religious worship or admiration of the shepherds.
Is there like a name for it? It doesn't have to be yet, but I just
There should be a name, but I'm really bad at names. And then Mo's gonna say something really good in like 2 seconds. So
he also said the brink. So I just want to be 100% clear that he might not say something good. But
the thing is,
the brink is good.
The problem is the brink is good. It's just a 1999 DCOM original. But I was just gonna say The Chosen. I think they view themselves. Actually, we'll find out more.
No. Yeah, this is mine. You just get to do the name. That's all you're here for.
Find Chosen. To play out. So one thing with that being an event, I guess, is like the emergence is kind of broad. Like, okay. That, like, the revelation, you know what I mean?
Can it be like a more formal, like the founding of the Chosen as like a institution or something?
Or maybe they do their first political act and they have just like a demonstration.
Okay.
Can you describe for me like what the vibes are of the people who are the Chosen, just out of curiosity?
Stato Institute.
Well, that's what we play to find out, right?
No. Lauren picked up what I was putting down.
I mean, I'm allowed to flesh it out.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you don't just say one sentence and then like shut the fuck up, right? Like, you're allowed to.
You can say two sentences and then shut the fuck up. That's the rule.
Shut the fuck up.
So, Mike, you asked, "What's the vibe?"
Yeah.
What was Nadia's deal? She was just a random Verge person on the Amity.
No, she was like part of a secret Aventine. It was a secret like Aventine mission. They were the ones moving the
Okay, cool.
Thank moving you. The devices.
So I think that there were people who, I don't think it's exclusively like in Aventine, Verge, Earth. Like, I don't think it's just one of those that was part of the Chosen necessarily. But I think the commonality with those people is they were generally people who had spent more time in the Verge planets and had experienced kind of more of the hardship. So I don't think it's necessarily a ton of people from Earth were as drawn to being part of the Chosen. And I think a big thing is that they view the shepherds as like the next step for humanity in some way.
Is that a light or a dark event? I have my suspicions, but
That's a dark event.
All right, so that is the end of my focus, or my turn is the lens. So now it is Lauren's turn to take the reins.
All right. And just again, as the lens,
you're the lens, you pick the focus in the microscope.
Yep. The fine focus or the rough focus?
We were talking about how we're worried that you might be just advantaged and better at this game than us because of your practical experience.
The thing is, I haven't used a microscope in a hot minute, actually. There was
you've still spent more time with your eyes glued like on the fucking viewfinder than all of us combined.
Microscopes absolutely just see things that are too big for what Lauren looks at. That's the problem.
We have like three microscopes in our house. Have you seen them, Michael?
No.
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
Why does that sound like, why is this so ominous?
Yeah. It's like, this is how he finds out about the dark secret.
One is under your bed.
And why is Mike so worried?
It feels like microscopes are not small. I don't know. I guess they're in like a box or something somewhere, but I can't.
Wow. You tell me what microscopes are. How about, just keep going. I'm listening.
Microscope-splaining.
I'm microscope-splaining to the audience, not to the scientist.
I'll show you when we get done with this. Okay, hey. So as a component of a microscope, I have the ability to do the focus. And then is it true, if I'm remembering correctly, I like can place two things down, period,
they have to be stacked.
Event, or, okay, and they have to be stacked. Okay.
So it could be like an event within a period or a scene within an event. And it's optional. You can, if you only have one thing you want to put down, that's fine. But you have the option to put a stacked set if you want. It just can't be like, oh, I'm going to put a period down and then an event in a different period. You can't do that.
I gotcha. Okay. Now that makes perfect sense. Thank you for clarifying. So I think the focus for my round, I would like to be the period that I already placed. Since I thought it was so good, it was good enough to go on the timeline. It'll be obviously good enough to be the focus. Humankind grapples with the reveal of sapient life. Under this, within this period, I am going to create an event. And that event is Iko commissions the Manhattan Redux. And I guess I'll do a scene under that event.
And I just want to ask, before you get to the scene, you can, if you want to defer this, I mean, kind of, it's not in the rules normally about allow this. You didn't set a tone for the Manhattan Redux.
Oh, that's dark. Thank you for asking. That this is dark.
And why, I guess, like, why is it? And maybe that will give us our first hint as what the Manhattan Redux is, unless that's like what the event is, but or the scene, I mean, excuse me. I mean, I have ideas. It's evocative. I have ideas.
I mean,
I truly
don't want to answer your question. So the answer to your question is the question for the scene that I want to put down.
Okay. Okay.
Which is,
I'll allow it then.
What does Mara Belova show Amir Brennan to get him to join the Manhattan Redux?
Oh, shit.
Damn. And I get to pick first characters on Mara Belova.
Yeah, obviously. God, I don't want to make this too funny.
This definitely is like, this shit was not anime enough, was what we had decided about Worlds Away, and we're fixing it right the fuck now.
Oh, yeah, this is Helen. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no.
Setting is Amir's office, brackets, university.
University of Learning.
University School of College. Where degrees are given.
Was he on Aventine?
No. He was on Earth.
No.
He was the guy that wrote the, what was the book? Or do you remember?
The Theory of the Other. He shares one third of the Nobel with Mara Belova for solving the propagation problem on behalf of Genesynth and humanity.
Thank you.
So we have our question. We have our setting, well, a portion of the setting. And so, then I think, John, you are able to pick.
Oh, man.
Character.
Do you want to make any characters required? I assume the two people in the scene.
Yes, I'll write that down.
Yeah, you're going to be up to two required characters. So that's
those are the two. Gotta be in there.
I'm really torn because, like, DM John, like, absolutely wants to be Amir Brennan. That's, like, I've never wanted anything more in my life. But I also don't want to, like, use the fact that you happen to do this to, like, get to dominate the scene since I've been kind of...
To be clear, this is through the Iko commission. So, this is theoretically any persuasive or non-persuasive NPC could show up here.
I kind of like being Amir, though, actually, in this, because I'm now realizing he doesn't have the answer to the question, right?
Yeah.
It's what Mara, like, shows him, and there could be other people present that are getting to, like, influence that more, and he's kind of more of the audience in this. So I actually like that, and I will be Amir Brennan.
Alrighty.
And can you just describe a little bit more? You might have said this before, but, like, what's his, like, speciality, or, like, what have we kind of established
previously? He's a physicist. Yeah, he's the theoretical physicist, the planetary motion-y type big picture sigma whatnot dude.
All right, so that's my pick. Kaylee?
Oh, I'm next? Oh, because we go in opposite order?
Yeah.
Damn, I thought I was going to be at the end. I wonder if I will sit this scene out. I don't have any inspo. Yeah, I'm skipping. Skip me.
Okay, Mo.
Mo types down. Nadia, Lasky
assassin.
I'm trying to think of who we've met that's a scientist. I know I can create a character here, but I'm... how much time has passed between first contact with Doran and this moment is flexible, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We don't get to say, you know what I mean? And we want to keep it vague if we can. Like, obviously, there's things that might, like, change what that looks like that we establish in the scene, you know what I mean? But we don't want to say it's been, like, 322 days since that happened, right?
What was the name of the twin doctors on Kairos?
Oh, shit.
Oh.
Twin doctors on Kairos.
Yeah, the one who was assaulted with by the terrorists.
I don't think they were twins. They were just sisters, but...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember them being twins now.
I'll retake the line. What was the name of the sister doctors on Kairos?
Let me...
Mo region deep into his bag.
We could have just left it in the other way. It's okay to fuck up whether they're twins or not.
Deep into the bag, Mo.
Like, I was right there inside you. They
corrected whether they were twins or not.
No, I will maintain my history, but it's fine. All right. Oh, yeah. It's Danica and Eliza Stone.
And which one's the evil one?
Eliza.
From my perspective...
Capitalism. Oh no, maybe they are. Wait. Maybe they were twins. Their ages are the same. Hold on.
You just got outrun by Mo.
No. Hold on. Oh my god. Give me a second. I don't know if I believe that.
You added yourself as a hack and a fraud.
No, I know. Fuck, now we gotta edit this whole soundboard in. Fuck me. This is sorry, Haley, your work's cut out for you. This is terrible.
Wait. God, I honestly, dude, yeah, Mo is our show historian. I understand you write the show, but there's so much extraneous content you write, and Mo listens to the stuff that makes it to the cutting room floor only. And does it repeatedly. Again and again and again and again.
Oh, yep. Fuck me. This is Danica Stone. Sasha Green.
Shit.
This is Danica Stone, one of the scientists assigned to Kairos. Her twin sister was in the video I just showed you. I don't know if I said that line verbatim, but that was in my fucking notes as a bullet. So.
You did.
Mo, I wish you could take this moment and, like, turn it into creamer for your iced coffee.
Thank you. Don't worry. Listen to this again after we release it, I'll get this joy one more time.
I'll go and give you the cut.
Holy
you know,
fuck.
Now we have to play the whole thing with the correction, the go back, and the gotcha. Like, this has to say
it. It's all staying in. This is half of this episode, unfortunately.
I genuinely wonder when they hear it the first time, how many of our listeners are going to be like, no, they weren't twins. What the fuck are you talking about? Or how many are going to be going, yeah, like, they were. I thought they were twins. What the hell?
This is so good. Oh, my God.
I'm so excited.
Mandela effect.
Okay. Fucking character are you picking? Anyway, what fucking character?
The good twin. What was her name again?
No, the evil one. Danica.
By the good twin, you mean the one that wasn't trying to save the planet, right?
That's right.
No, the one that was trying to save the planet.
Just to be clear about who we're saying was good or evil.
Right. The one that was not impersonating a terrorist.
To save the planet. No. The one who was trying to save the planet is the one I want.
Oh.
Not
so the one that
was like annoying to us.
Okay. Then that's Eliza. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And her last name is
Stone.
I will be playing Eliza Stone, first assistant to Mara Belova on the Manhattan Redux project.
Oh, damn. Shit.
Wait. Okay. I'm so sorry. I'm like not understanding. There was one lady who pretended to be a hostage but was actually a baddie, and there was another lady who was on the ship with us and was trying to help us but kept getting in our way.
Right.
Which one are you, Mo?
The baddie.
Okay, which one of the two?
You just said that was your word. Just described as a baddie.
You just said baddie.
Your word,
the baddie.
Okay. I used your word.
Okay. They're twins. Baddie. They were both baddies. Okay.
No. The one who was pretending to be a terrorist or to be a hostage but was a baddie. Your word.
Okay, again, I didn't know if, because there is a slang term, I was trying to clarify.
Okay.
The right, terrorist. Mo's playing the terrorist. Duh, come on.
The fake terror. Fake terrorist.
I felt terror.
All right, I'm on her side. All right. And Mara, I guess I will say maybe I will invoke the thing of the palette. Mara, you're good with her being like the first assistant to Mara Belova, just as it does like affect Mara's
choice.
Yeah,
like, okay, that sounds
choice.
Great.
Okay. All right, Mike, you're up.
Lauren, is Mara Belova playing the role of like Robert Wilson or Oppenheimer in this sort of project?
I don't know who that first person is.
Robert Wilson's the person who recruited Feynman to the Manhattan Project, and I think this is a recruitment pitch, but like obviously Oppenheimer was too important to like do the recruitment
she's
himself.
Recruiting.
Okay, so who's the made-up scientist that is actually in charge of whatever the Manhattan Redux is?
The guy I'm recruiting. What the fuck do you mean?
Oh, you're recruiting them to lead the whole project, not just to participate.
Babe, get with it.
My bad. Then
you're lucky
going...
you're a baddie. Because sometimes.
Let's see here. Can I be Amir Brennan's PhD student? Or no, Amir Brennan's postdoc?
I would love nothing more for you to be his postdoc.
This is so good.
Actually, just kidding. I'm Admiral Isabella Mendoza. No, I'm just kidding.
How many scenes can we have as, you know.
As Isabella Mendoza? I don't know.
Well, each of us, that's one of the other rules of Microscope, is that each of us has to get a turn to play Isabella fuck motherfucking Mendoza.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let me tell you, it's a delight, truly.
I'll just say that their name is Albert Fox, spelled F-U-C-H-S. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.
No.
All right. And then, Lauren, that leaves you, but there is a mandatory character left to play. So I think we know who you are.
Unfortunately, nobody took Mara Bulova.
I was thinking about it.
I mean, hey, she's a baddie.
Mara Bulova, former member of the Minerva Project.
Yeah.
All right.
She's got a lot of formers in her title, frankly.
I actually have a question before we get started, which is, Lauren, which of the two twin sisters would you rather have as a first assistant? I'm fine with either, to be honest.
I feel like it's spicier to have the one who was the terrorist. But I also think it's spicier in a different way to have the one who Mara specifically locked on the ship from coming with us to like help save her sister. So either of those is going to be spicy. Whatever you want.
Got it. Eliza it is.
Excellent. I like it being Eliza too. I think it's interesting. They're both interesting. And she's the one that has the tattoo of the system, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now we have to say the thoughts, I guess. We have to go around and share our initial. Yeah. So I guess is that me that starts that?
Yeah, you can go ahead. Yeah.
So I think, I don't know what Amir is like. I mean, I think he goes into this and like, this helps because I, John, don't know what the fuck I'm about to learn, right? And what the true nature of Manhattan Redux is. I think there's kind of two things that he's thinking of. One is that I think that in his, like, the theory of the other, or maybe just in his thought, generally speaking, he is convinced of the futility, maybe, of the idea of our surviving this version of Fermi's paradox. Mm-hmm. And I think he's like, okay, you know, like, I'm still going on with my life, but we're pretty much fucked, is kind of his thought process going into this. And I think he's not in a good spot because of that. But I think that the thing that might kind of change in this scene is realizing that with R having some power, that might make us like more morally suspect. I'll put it that way, right? It's kind of like, what is the, I think he's worried about what Manhattan Redux might be and the kind of implications of it. So I think that he's like, you know, that might be a thing that comes into his mind. I'm not saying it will, because it kind of depends on what he learns. But I think that could be a shift in his concern here. Whereas there's like safety in nihilism, you know, morally speaking for him.
Mm.
It's like easier. I guess Haley's not in this scene, so it's no.
I am thinking, I can't believe that there's anyone of like this caliber of education and intelligence who has to be convinced to take part in the most important project in the history of humanity. So I'm frustrated.
Mm. Mike?
I'm here as a marble of a fanboy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
I asked for the favor. I was like, oh, my God, can I please attend this meeting? Please, please. Oh, my God. And I was very much instructed to just shut the fuck up and not embarrass Amir.
I think that Mara probably started out on like going back to Earth. And this is not the only thing she came back to Earth for, right? I think that obviously we haven't fleshed out what the focus will be, right? Humankind grappling with sapient life reveal. And so I think she's there to like calm the waters and also like get things in motion. And this is one stop on a lot of trips. But I think like as she, you know, boarded whatever futuristic thing that passes for travel on Earth, I think she started to get very nostalgic. And it was almost like traveling back in time where she just constantly got hit with like wave after wave of flashback to long days, long nights, experiment after experiment, verbal fights to champagne popping in like getting awarded and everything. And then like the fact that he didn't come with her, like, or he didn't stay on at Genesynth and he like went back to academia. So I think that they're like, there's all of this businessy where her brain should be, but like, that's not where she is at whatsoever. So I actually think the scene starts in that Mara was there early, and Mara and Eliza went to, instead of going to the office, she came about 30 minutes early and went to his laboratory space, where they ran into Albert Fox first.
So like, I'm not in the scene. I'm in the office essentially, and it's like everybody but me.
Yeah, because like I think like I don't even know if you're in your office yet, right? Like you could be at a meeting, you could be doing whatever 9 million things professors do. But I think that Mara specifically like wanted to go into a laboratory, you know? And I think she like just felt that on a whim and decided to do it. So I think like you hear some knocks on the laboratory door, and before someone can like open it, she like pops her head in. Hi.
Dr. Brennan.
Sorry, I apologize for interrupting you and your large laser experiment, but we were a little bit early and
we're looking for Dr. Brennan.
No, you interrupt me? No, never. You please come in. I'll go get Dr. Brennan. I'm so sorry that you had to wait.
Yeah, no. We're definitely early. We were planning on getting to his office on time, but I thought I'd just walk through his lab space and see what kind of setup he has going on here. And so, like, I guess I'll turn it over to you, Mike. What kind of, in like a few words, do you think they have like new polished equipment, shitty old stuff? Like, is it?
Yeah. What kind
messy?
Of microscopes are we working with?
Clean.
I don't want to focus at all on the equipment. I want to focus on what Albert Fox has been doing this entire time, yes. Which is that this is a space that has been occupied by the most degenerate species imaginable, the grad students, which is why there was a bunch of shit that needed to be cleaned up around the lab to make it presentable to look like a respectable workplace. And he just finished cleaning out a coffee pot that had been sitting balanced over a laser as long as possible. They've just been systemically adding more coffee and like burning it to the bottom to see if they could fill it up with just the charred remains of coffee all the way to the top of the pot over the course of several months. He thought to clean the pot rather than just get rid of it in a panic through all of this. And so there is a disgusting looking pot in hand as you walked in that he is scrubbing. And the space mostly looks presentable, but to the average person, this is a fucking sty.
Amazing. I love that you described this coffee pot. I'm sorry, but I have to jump in and be like, oh, she like notices and she's like, aw, he's still making forever pots.
I will add, just for my character's bit, I don't think that there's any sign of Amir Brennan in the lab right now.
Oh, of course not. Because he's a professor. He doesn't do research. Yeah. And so I think that, like, maybe, like, well, yada yada, but I think that Albert takes Eliza and Mara through, like, a small tour of the laboratory and kind of gestures to all of his favorite lasers and terminals. You know, the one that like still has the best internet connection and the other one that has the most RAM and other things that you would find in physics laboratories. I don't really know.
I, as Eliza, am growing increasingly frustrated.
Mm.
First, that we're not talking to Amir Brennan. And then just at the incredible and expensive nature of the equipment, as a scientist who spent the last many years on the surface of a outpost on Kairos, I'm like miffed.
I imagine that it's like they just have capabilities of doing experiments that, like, with instruments that don't travel well or like need too much, like pull too much energy. So it's like, it's maybe even not like the shiniest, newest equipment. They just like, for all the different various reasons, they're a well-stocked lab on Earth. And like, you essentially did it in like a desert with a box of scraps. But again, we can fast forward through this portion. And so I think we walk into the office maybe a few minutes late.
I think that the door to the office, maybe it's either mostly shut but not all the way closed, or at least it's unlocked. And I think that when you open it, you see like there's a couch in the office. And I think that Amir Brennan's wearing, like, I don't want to say like tweed jacket, but it's kind of too ridiculous. But he's wearing like a jacket, like a coat, right? But he's like on the, everything's like super wrinkled, and he's just like was like sleeping on the couch essentially. And I think you actually see there's a like a thin bottle of some kind of brown liquor that is like on the floor next to him, like where his hands outstretched next to a coffee cup. And I think he kind of starts up when the door opens, and then like kind of you see his eyes focused, and he just says, "Jesus, Mara, I didn't realize you were coming." And then he kind of starts moving stuff and trying to tidy up the place. Is it time? And I think he kind of looks at his watch.
Oh, past time.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Dr. Brennan is never, Dr. Brennan is always like this.
Albert, you didn't think to warn me before you brought them in here?
I thought for a meeting as important as this, you'd be ready.
Wow. Oh my. An illustrious tenured professor blaming their graduate student for something they should be well prepared for. Never seen that happen before.
I'm a postdoc.
I think that he just looks at him and then looks at you. As if, like, I'm like...
I will, at that point, I think there's like an ounce of mercy in my soul. And I will say, Dr. Fox, was it?
Yes.
Would you mind getting Dr. Belova some coffee?
Oh, yes, of course. I'm so sorry. I didn't ask sooner.
Do you have a Mr. Coffee?
I don't know the sex of our coffee maker.
I think Dr. Brennan jumps in and says, Albert, it's fine. I think she's a big fan of the Forever Pot also.
Oh, of course. I'll go get some right now. And Albert leaves.
I think that like when that happens, Amir opens up the large drawer at the, like the sort of big drawer at the bottom of the desk, and puts the bottle and the coffee cup, both of them, in the drawer, and then closes it. And kind of sits in the chairs holding his head and says, what was so important that we had to discuss it in person, Mara?
Well, I think she kind of like makes some gestures with her hands, but she says, you know, we can get to that in a second. You were right. And she takes out a slate and she goes to like instant pay him like 10 credits.
Oh, yes.
And this was about the bet, right?
Yeah.
And what was the bet again? Can you remind me?
Oh, no. Sorry. I don't remember if I actually established this again. Canon. But I mean, it's heavily implied that Mara took the opposite end of a bet of, is there sapient life out there, or will we discover it in our lifetimes?
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that that's like, he wouldn't be like confused by that.
No.
I think that he like looks down at his slate and it has like the, you know, payment of the 10 solars or whatever the currency is that we decided.
Well, it's a future. It's credits.
Yeah. Right. I forgot the rules. Credits are gold, right? I think he goes and looks at it, and I think he laughs, right? I think he laughs and then touches his head because he's hungover and it hurts. And I think he says, "That's Very kind of you, Mara, to remember. I'm glad that I can come out of this feeling like a winner.
I mean, it felt like for such a long time, this was all you talked about.
I guess I imagined it ending up a little better than how it seems it is.
Yes, our imminent destruction, potential destruction, is a bit of a dampener on one's spirits. But I suppose that's why I'm here. And I look at Eliza Stone. I am here to recruit you to a project. Sorry, it's just, I don't know what Nolan felt like. I don't know how he did this.
I think he kind of exhales again, shakes his head left to right, and says,
"Yeah.
Well, I don't want to deny you that opportunity, but I don't want you to waste your breath either. If this is the grand plan I've been hearing about from some of my colleagues, the idea that you have some way to stop the shepherds, I appreciate trying to give people a sense of hope, but a project that's only purpose is to delude the public, I can't get behind that. You and I both know there's no way to stop this, Mara.
I don't.
And who might you be?
The smile on Eliza's face is sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Eliza Stone, you're saying that there's nothing we can do. Why? Because they're currently more technologically advanced than we are?
Well, let me spell it out for you, Dr. Stone. They have ships that can tear holes through space and time. They've traveled distances thousands of times, what humanity's even thought to traverse in our galaxy. And so, are they more technologically advanced than us now? Yes. And I don't see any chance that we could change that in a course of months, years, decades.
We have access to some of their technology. We have a sentience with first-hand knowledge of the technology that we can communicate with. We currently have the ability to destroy planets just like they do.
And we're planning on expanding that. Part of what we are calling the Manhattan Redux will be taking our existing technologies and augmenting them to make them stronger. Taking technologies that were theirs, breaking them down, and then building them back up again, bigger and more advanced. That's part of the project.
The difference between us and them, Doctor, is that we know what's coming, and they have no idea what they're about to find. And despite what Dr. Belova says, you're no longer the smartest person in our little quadrant of the galaxy.
Woo!
I think that he actually gets a kind of grim look on his face. Like a more, I think he's kind of like gallows humor was the vibe he's putting off. I think he kind of gets a bit of a grim look. And he says, with every adoption of a technology that humanity hasn't fully understand, there's always been consequences. Trying to adopt their technology to use it against them, that's going to be no different. You know that people are going to die, right? That there's going to be a cost.
There's always a cost, Doctor. And I think I rub my arm around where Kairos is on the tattoo.
Mm-mm.
I think Mara takes another tact and says, remind me how he convinced you to join Genesynth.
Do you mind if I... Do we establish anything about this? Or can I just get full carte blanche on it?
No, okay. Go for it.
I think he... At that, he kind of laughs and shakes his head. And I think he says, well, you see, when he came and pitched it to me the first time, he tried everything he could think of. He told me that if we solved the problem, we'd be famous, that I'd win prizes. And I think he kind of like look at the wall and see, like, you know, there's like the Nobel and like all kinds of shit up there, right? That if I wanted to leave my, at the time, admittedly smaller office, that I could and have a career in the private sector. If we solved this problem, that would mean I never had to think about working another day in my life. And he said that if we solved this problem, we would change the galaxy for humanity forever. None of that convinced me.
No, didn't it?
But when he told me that another researcher had signed on, and when he showed me the first draft of her proposal, and I thought if someone was that audacious to actually write those words down, I just had to meet her.
I'm going to show you another first draft. And I think that she looks over to Eliza, and I think that Eliza has a bunch of like audiovisual gear packed up for like a presentation.
I start setting up.
Yeah. I think that Mara will start saying, recently, my previous colleagues and I from the Minerva Project were called by ICO to investigate certain anomalies in the Verge. While on the planet Satis, we encountered this. And like a kind of like hologram 3D projection of the rift will pop up. Now, it would be interesting enough if we had these readings. And I think, again, like there's a like a screen and then just we just see, you know, math pop up, blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah.
While we were there, though, something very interesting happened that detailed more specific natures of this anomaly. And I think like a third screen starts showing like video of the rift as it like collapses in on itself. And I think that Mara goes on and says, this is the most advanced technology ever seen by human eyes. And I want you to use all of this data to make it for us.
I think we just see him like looking up at the notes, and then maybe I think he looks up at the, at both of you, and maybe I think Dr. Stone, you see like an, a new look of respect in his eyes, or knowing, right, that he sees you as a colleague. And maybe that's where we end.
Nope. One more thing. Albert walks in with a coffee and goes, what did I miss?
Hey everyone, it's Mo. Thank you so much for listening to Worlds Away. This game has been a blast to play, and it has been wonderful to get to share the story with you. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far, you can help us out by spreading the word to friends and family. And if they are starting to get annoyed with the fact that you keep talking about us, that's okay. That means you're doing it right. You can also support us by giving us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform where you listen to podcasts. And if you want to give us a shout out on social media, you can find us on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod. We're online at worldswaypod.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the episode.
All right, Lawrence, do you know the answer to the question?
I showed him the rift, yeah.
Yeah, so you go ahead and write down.
Not only that, but like I showed him like the collapse of the rift in that.
Yeah, yeah.
We have sufficient, maybe sufficient scientific, you know, expertise to recreate this multidimensional travel or whatever you want to call it.
The biggest leap forward for humanity since Lustra.
Yes. I forgot about Lustra.
And then one more thing is, I think I maybe have a sense of the answer, but is this a light or a dark emotional scene?
I think, like, the scene itself was very light, but I think the ramifications...
I will say, not to argue, but right, but you do have the, because you did put a dark on the event, you know what I mean? And the scene is different from the event. So it could be, if you think that in the scene it was dark emotionally, like itself, that makes sense. But you don't have to be tied, just because the event's dark doesn't mean the scene has to be dark.
Right. So I think in the span of the commissioning and all the ramifications of this project, I think is overall dark. But I think this one in itself is light.
Okay, so let me ask.
Except for the coffee, that was dark.
Right.
Always.
It was black, in fact. Can I play a period for this?
Yeah. As long as it relates to humankind grappling. Like, there is a period that is the focus,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it has to be something that directly relates to that period.
Then, for my period, after the era of great projects, we have Second Contact.
Ooh.
And I'm going to go ahead and put that as dark.
What does that mean?
If the first contact with sapient life was with Doran the Traveler, I think that we may have been successful in our goals with the Manhattan Redux and achieved second contact, but maybe not in the way that we had hoped.
Interesting.
Neon Genesis Evangelion.
I feel like you're implying something, and I don't feel like I'm picking up on it.
I really just want y'all to riff off of it, really. So I think just saying that there was a second contact and that it was a bad thing is, I just want y'all to play off, like, yes and it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going for a specific vision.
I kind of love this too, because you put it before the evacuation of Avatine, which seems to imply that, like, it doesn't mean it, right? It doesn't, like, anything could happen, but it creates the possibility of that's the thing that happened that was like, oh, we fuck, you know what I mean? And then we had to evacuate Avatine.
If I can put my thumb on the scale just a little bit on that, I think it is more important to me that it's closer to the era of great projects than it is to the evacuation of Aventine. But however you all want to play it is sort of the thing. Like, I see this as like the era of great projects happened, and one of the successes was like maybe that the Manhattan Redux was successful, and then second contact.
Yeah. No, I like it a lot. All right, Mo, you're up.
I think I'm going to do an event. The invention of the worm drive.
Ooh.
And this is under the era of great projects.
Yep.
Oh, worm. W-Y-R-M. Oh, we fantasy as fuck now.
Yeah.
Dragon drive?
No reason we have to call things dumb names.
Like Brink.
Oh, I kind of like... Also, that's how they got to the Brink.
Yeah.
Yes.
To get to the... Fuck me. This is terrible. I can't believe you named it that. God damn it.
Yeah. Bring humanity back from the Brink. Come on, it's so good.
Okay, so first of all, it's named after Hillary Brink, the researcher. So fucking get with it. Jesus.
I'm with her.
Yes.
Mo, is it light or dark?
The invention of the worm drive is light.
I guess, I know that might be an obvious answer, but why do you want to say why it's light? Like, what tonally about it is positive?
If I put a reason, can that establish canon?
Yeah, sure. That's why we asked that. So, yeah, yeah.
I think it is the first breakthrough in adapting Shepard's technology since the perfection of the stealth drive. So I think this is the first thing that we do that, like, where we garner an ability equivalent to that of the Shepherds in some category, or like no longer orders of magnitude weaker than that of the Shepherds.
Or maybe like, and again, this is kind of the thing of what's opened the timeline. I tried to kind of in my character, like foreshadow, like the thing that I was trying to put down, if that wasn't obvious, was the destruction of the Halcyon Vale.
Yeah, of course.
So it's like, oh, that was like an attempt to adapt it that didn't go super hot. And so that's kind of interesting. All right, so Haley, you're up.
I know what I feel is that Second Contact occurred in the Brink. I'm just trying to figure out, is it a scene or am I just putting in an event to flesh out more of what Second Contact was like?
I think that the thing about Second Contact is when Mike placed it, it was a period, right? So it's like there's more than one event that comprises that period, right? So, I mean, it could be, if you're saying there's an event under the discovery of the Brink that is Second Contact, I guess that's possible. Or, sorry, a scene under that event. But I guess it's like if it's fitting in the definition of the Second Contact period, I think it has to be under, like, you know, it'd have to first be an event under that period before it can be a scene.
Yeah, I get that. I was just saying, did I want to flesh out the discovery of the Brink more with a scene, mm-hmm. or did I want to make an event under Second Contact? I think I will do an event under Second Contact. I think there is the launch of a mission, like a manned mission of a ship with the worm drive that reaches the Brink.
Okay.
And I think that event is light because we are hopeful that we could actually, like, could this be a destination for us where we could evacuate to?
I'm going to put an event under Second Contact also. And I think that that event is humanity abandons the Brink.
Oof.
And I think I don't want to spell out too much about what caused it, because I think there's things that we could put in before to flesh that out. And I want to leave some of the doors open. But I think it's as a result of Second Contact. I think it could be that it's like, it's the shepherds, right? That's possible. But I think it could also be like maybe we interacted with another species or something and it didn't go super hot. And maybe it wasn't because they were the baddies, right? I don't know what that means, but I think it didn't, like, we decided that it was bad for us or bad in another way for us to stay. I think because of that, I'm going to mark it as a dark tone. And then I think we'll, you know, we can flesh out what happened in between those things at some point. But I think that either way, humanity leaves the Brink at that point. And so now it's back to you, Lauren. You can put down a single thing, or again, you have the option to do another nested set.
You know, let's go crazy. I'm going to do a nested set.
All right.
Ooh.
So under Humankind Grapples with the Reveal of Sapient Life, I'm going to go with the event. Evidence of sapient life is revealed on Earth via telecast.
Ooh.
And under that, we're going to have a scene. And the setting is a bar. The question is, how do all the characters at this bar feel about aliens?
And let me just ask, because you're putting these down, where does that occur on the timeline? Like, under, because, like, these are still in time order, if that makes sense, underneath the Humankind Grapples.
Yeah, so this event would go to the top of the order. This is, like, literally the first thing. This is the reveal to Earth individuals of sapient life.
Yeah, so before the Chosen are revealed, which itself is before the ICO commission of the Manhattan Redux.
Yes, exactly. So my character is Bernice, who is a bartender at Crocodile Alley.
Don't you go last?
Lauren, you go last, yeah.
I'm literally putting this down. I actually don't care. Like, this is just in the ether. I'm sorry, I'm not sorry.
So, as the person who goes first, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah, go first.
I fucking go first. Yeah. Let me just ask, though, before I pick my character, well, two things. One is, for the event of evidence of sapient life is real on Earth via telecast, one thing that you left out is the tone for that. Is that light or dark tone?
That's light.
Okay. I guess it's dark
because it's like the imminent destruction. So I guess the dark kind of overweighs on the light, right?
It's up and to then, you. Like, you know what I mean? That's interpretation. There's no wrong answer.
Yeah, we can make a comedic scene with a dark tone. We're allowed to do both.
That's really, I was just like, if there wasn't the whole event. A cadre of them are coming to kill us, all of this would be light. But then I do, when I reflect upon reflection, you know, I guess I'll have to say dark.
And then the other question I have is, you put a bar as the setting. I just want to hear a little bit more about the bar before we pick the characters.
Is it divey? Is it?
So it's called Crocodile Alley.
That sounds like a very upscale, classy place.
Yes.
It's the bar Nasir was in the first scene of the show.
It is. It actually is.
Hmm. Well, that was kind of, that wasn't like totally divey, right?
No, it was a little upscale.
So wait, did we say it's the same bar? Is that what we decided?
It's the same bar. I feel like it's multi-purpose, right? Like, I feel like it would be like on the bad side, or like the, I don't want to say the word bad.
The divier side of swanky, or the swankier side of divey?
Exactly. It's kind of like a shitty bar in DC, where it's like, no matter how shitty it is, you're always going to see people like in suits and ties and shit.
For what it's worth, when I pictured the bar, you know, 14 years ago when we started this, that's exactly what I was thinking. Was like,
yeah,
it's like a shitty nice bar in DC.
Yeah.
So we're in Montreal?
In Montreal.
I'm kind of tempted to be like the same dude from the flashback, or from the first scene.
You named him. He has a name.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking it up.
Holy shit.
He also has a twin.
It wasn't his twin. It was his brother.
What if everyone, all side characters have twins?
Holy fuck. Garrett Holden. Fuck yeah.
Shaw,
it's gonna be Garrett.
Wash.
Shaw was his last name.
Shaw and Wash is really fucking funny though. That sounds like such a fucking bad show on some network. Like, holy fuck.
Fight it all you want, but that is gold right there. Spitting bars.
I don't think I can put Shaw in the scene. I think I have to do Garrett. All right, Garrett Holden. What was his job? Hold on. He was some kind of like fucking financial dude.
Finance bro.
I just put finance bro. That was his job. Okay.
Haley.
I am a French Canadian woman named Julie.
I'm Nasir Baydock. And I'm on the screen making an announcement.
Okay, that's a little more normal.
No, I like it. I will say one thing that I forgot to mention as a mechanic is we have the ability to also play minor characters within the scene in addition to the major characters we're playing. So like, if it's the case that it calls for like some of our player characters, I always like I would give you guys the ability to jump in as that. So I don't want to restrict you from having that option, even if you want to play someone else in the scene. But you like, I mean, I feel like Nasir would probably be one of the main presenters, so.
I'm playing Nasir's twin.
Can you play a collection of minor characters, like a small anonymous crowd that's jeering or cheering?
So I think that's kind of like the concept of time is like what that is under the rules.
Can I explore that?
Yes, but you also have to be an assassin.
Every crowd has an assassin.
Yeah.
Every single crowd.
I think it's interesting, but I think the thing to think about that to make it fit within the rules is like, how is that the concept of time? So if it's like, oh, the crowd's getting like agitated or something, or it's like, oh, there's like a riot starting or something like that. I think that's kind of interesting, like something that's driving the scene to completion. The point of it is that you have to kind of like be adding pressure to the scene is your mission then if you take that on.
No, I was thinking about something a little more passive than that. Never mind.
You just be like a really drunk person at the bar.
That'd be fun.
Michael Morales.
Can you just be the chef in the kitchen? You're the concept of time because you're the chef in the kitchen. And like,
like I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Meal is ready.
Sentient poutine.
Last call. That's your only line.
Because I was thinking like as Nasir's giving the speech, there should be like dignitaries standing behind him, sort of like signaling. I don't know whether or not they like actually like the parts that they believe or the parts that they disbelieve. And I kind of like the idea of like, jumping face to face for like the Verge representatives versus like the main two factions as like, oh, this is the part we're comfortable. Like, oh, he's giving a speech. And the parts where like, we're bracing for like how people are going to.
No, I think you could do that if the point is that you're being specific characters, or like you could be a like be minor characters if you wanted to do that. I think that that's allowed.
Okay.
It's just that you couldn't be like a mob, you know what I mean? Or like the crowd, right? You could be particular people if you want to just only do minor characters.
Then yeah, then I'd like to be the dignitary representatives of the Verge planets and other respected institutions standing by behind Nasir Baydak as he's giving this speech showing a unified front for all of humanity, including but not limited to, let's say, Nico Torres, Katia LeClaire's there, Isabella Mendoza, obviously, and others that we've seen throughout the show. Whoever your favorite is, listener, they're there.
And Lauren, I think you already kind of said.
Yeah, Bernice, bartender.
All right. Well, I guess it's time to go around and do the reveal of our thoughts. So I guess I get to go first. Garrett is definitely like, I think that he went to the bar and he like got stood up, but is like, he's not, you know, he kind of justifies that to himself. It wasn't anything he did, right? It was like the person that was going to meet him sucks. And he's trying to like go and just like find dudes in his phone to like go and get a hookup tonight. And he's just like, oh, that person, you know, whoever's going to meet him sucked anyways. And then I think that the broadcast begins, and I think that he is just like becoming absolutely terrified and losing it as a result of the information. And I guess like a question for that is like, when we pick up in the scene, like has the, like how far into the broadcast are we when the scene starts? Which I guess, Lauren, that's something you get to pick when we start it up.
I think for Julie, she is like a mid-level bureaucrat at the Republic offices in some random agency that you've never heard of. And she's really burnt out, but this place is like 5 minutes from the office, so she often comes here and just shit sucks. And she's just here to get a drink.
This might be the most important address I ever give humanity. And if I don't get it right, billions of people could die.
Sweet.
No pressure.
No pressure.
And then I think, I just wanted to be a plumber on an alien planet.
It's a wee Minerva project, and ever it's a meanest.
Monsieur the plumber.
That's what I am.
Too bad you couldn't lay some pipe for Garrett tonight.
Oh, well, nah. Too bad for Garrett. I wouldn't wish Garrett on Nasir.
Okay, did Nasir dick him down before?
No, he was trying to dick him down so that he didn't have to see the announcement of the Minerva Project, but Garrett was talking too much.
Wasn't quick enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Garrett was classic being too Garrett yapper. For that to work.
Garrett could have gotten some if he had just shut the fuck up.
Garrett always seems like he gets his own in his own way.
Mike, what you got?
Yeah, I think the delegation is somewhat split, so
It could just be like the vibes, you know what I mean? I realize for a group of characters like that, it's hard to be like, what's your thought process? But
yeah, I think everybody in this delegation has seen an advanced copy of Nasir's script, and they're all waiting for the beats that they can just sort of hear how the residents of their home planets are going to like push back at certain points on that speech and are sort of like bracing for that. But the one unifying thought is, oh fuck, I hope he stays on script this time.
I like that. Lauren?
Bernice has been a bartender at Crocodile Alley for like 15 years now. And she was like just getting ready to purchase it off of the old couple that owned the place, Eunice and Eustace. And she's feeling pretty good about life because she's got some money in her pocket. She's finally going to be an independent woman. Everything's coming up Bernice.
A reminder for Lauren that Bernice definitely knows Nasir. Like,
oh my God.
And is, how many questionable decisions has she seen Nasir make?
At the end of the first scene, I left my card at the bar, trusting I could get it back from Bernice later because I was trying to get out of there. Bernice has watched me make many terrible decisions at this point.
Okay, this is delicious. Thank you. I didn't realize at the time. Sorry, my Nasir Rolodex is like I should have.
Yeah, it got all the way back to the amazing very beginning.
Okay.
So I want to kind of come back to my question about when it starts. Like, is it already in the middle of the broadcast? I will say, so, like, there's one pitch of if it's before the broadcast, I do have a fucking line because of what Nasir just said. If you want me to kick something off of the line, but it's totally up to you where it starts.
I think that it's like, I was okay with it starting like whenever. I was thinking like, oh, it starts off like Nasir has just said there's sapient life and now they're getting into the evidence. But I like the idea of it like all day, like on every wavelength, be it radio, every podcast, neither of those things exist in the future, but stick with me. TV, like every way that people are getting information, Facebook, that's because that like virus is going to exist into the future, that freaking cockroach. Like there have been alert, like Republic sanctioned ICO
press conference.
Thank you. This evening, tune in XYZ. Like, I think it's like a literal has been an event that people are getting off work for. And it was like booked in the day. So like people are like weirdly turning it into like a match on TV. Right. So like I think the bar is like full. Yeah. But I think that it's like everything. The TV has been shut down. It just now shows like a countdown to the like broadcast of the speech.
So if I can throw one thing in then, I think that Garrett's at the bar with his drink, right? And I think he has his slate out. And I think it's like he just found out that, or it's like you see a bunch of texts on the screen. It's like, are you coming? What the fuck? We have plans. And he's just like, this fucking bar. And I think he kind of puts the slate down and starts trying to flag Bernice down to get another drink.
Yeah, I think she's like, you know, like delivering like two drinks to people who are like kind of smooshed up to the bar. And I think she walks over to Garrett and be like, so expecting another, or is it going to be, you know, what can I get you? Sorry.
Just another of these. Thank you.
I think Julie is sitting next to Garrett at the bar. And she's just kind of bored looking at the countdown. And as Garrett's like waiting for his next drink, she just kind of says, I want to do a slight accent, but I don't want to be offensive. So just give me a second to dial in here.
It's tough.
My daughter.
What do you think the announcement will be?
Probably another treaty, another negotiation with the Verge. This will be our third armistice now.
I think she chuckles and says, more work for me, I'm sure.
I think he kind of raises his mostly empty glass at her and says, well, thank you for your service, at least.
I think she laughs, and then maybe we cut to the broadcast.
Yeah.
It is my esteemed honor to greet all of humanity at once for what may be the most important announcement in our history.
I think Garrett's like lets out a scoff and shakes his head. He's like, of course it is.
The dignitaries standing behind the seer are calm, stone-faced, and ready for this part.
Wait a second. We are not alone. Humanity has made contact with sapient, intelligent, alien life in the Verge.
At every one of those punctuations, they all winced behind you.
This guy is... Wait a second. No, this can't be the same guy.
And I'll look down at my speech, and then I'll kind of brush the sheet off of the podium a little bit.
The half that know you that were aligned with the Republic begin to visibly panic.
This is a joyous occasion. We have been reached out to by an ally alien force, sharing its knowledge, wisdom, and technology with us. though our ability to communicate is limited and has resulted in miscommunications, I am honored to say that I have spoken personally with our visitor, who goes by the name Doran, about what they have to offer our species. Their technology is far more advanced than our own. They possess the ability to travel even further than we can with our contramatter drives, and they possess incredible sensory technologies and abilities to manipulate gravitational pulls, which could be priceless in assisting humanity's great leap forward.
I think at this point, Julie had kind of been passively listening, but then as the information gets obviously interesting, I feel like, first of all, maybe the noise in the bar kind of quiets and everyone's just like paying a lot more attention. And then I think Julie specifically is kind of looking up at the screen in awe, her drink still clutched in her hand.
Yeah, this whole time as Nasir has been speaking, Bernice has been holding his ID, which he has, as Mo mentioned, left in the bar. And now again, like Nasir, like as Mo said, was a regular, but it's been several years, right, since that point. And so she's just like looking back and forth and is in total disbelief and is like, this is the guy? This is the guy. This can't be the guy, right? And I think at one point she goes over to like Garrett and is like, do you remember this guy?
I fucking remember him.
Yeah, he was here, right?
Humanity, not to panic for the images you are about to see. Alien life looks very different from our own. And then a picture of Doran slowly appears on the screen, and he's kind of weekended at Bernie's, where he's like sort of sat up, and it's like a picture of me and him sitting next to each other in as human a position as
this is
no
much wilder than I thought this was going to go. I think Garrett is just staring at the screen, like holding his head at this point, just in kind of disbelief at like, it's like both A, what's happening, and B, that this is like he's involved in this somehow.
The problem is this guy was like a world class shit talker, right? And now like Bernice is totally, even if she does or doesn't know how much Garrett knows, she just feels like she needs to get it out because like what is honestly going on? I served this guy one time. He started buying his guests. First started with the most expensive cocktail on the menu, took his drink, blew him off. Then the next most expensive, and on down the line till he was just buying like mat shots. It was, this is the guy? This is the guy? And she's just in absolute disbelief.
I think Julie looks over and says, wait, you two know Nasir Baydok?
I know that this can be hard to believe, but we must band together in this time of discovery at this in this momentous occasion. Unfortunately, and then I start showing some information data. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, like when he came in here, everyone saw the whole sob story campaign that he did, right? How he single-handedly ended the war or whatever, blah, 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 nonsense. And then they like took him off to do something in the Verge or whatever. And now they got him out here telling us like who human aliens exist. Like, this is the guy? This is your guy. Man.
He's definitely not my guy, but he was in
what a little
the Minerva project.
Garrett is.
I think Julie is half listening to what Nasir is saying, but she is looking at Garrett and Bernice, and she says, but I think this changes everything.
This changes everything.
God damn it.
However, with a heavy heart, I must say that Doran is not the only sapient alien life who has made contact.
Oh, the group behind you collectively adopt stern faces.
And in fact, and then it's a picture of the rogue, of the Spectre. A ship attacks Doran and many human vessels and means to come for all of humanity. There is a threat of technologically superior alien species.
Wait, turn that up.
Who are coming with the intention of annihilating humanity.
Ah, of course. Knew there was a catch.
Iko stands united in facing this threat. The leaders of the Verge planets, Earth and Aventine, and I gesture.
We try to put on a brave face, but if you zoomed in, you'd see there's some fear in their eyes.
Stand united to do everything we can to preserve humanity and to defeat this threat. We are working with the greatest scientists across the galaxy, tirelessly along with our new alien ally, to fight the great threat that is coming. And then there's like a bunch, there's like a scrolling thing on the screen. Information will be made readily available to the nature of the threat, so that each of you can be informed. Each of your planets has emergency protocols and plans in place that are being distributed and that are readily available virtually at this moment. We are working on solutions to ensure that all of humanity is safe, and we are doing so together. This is a tremendous moment for our species, and we will not let anyone or anything threaten that.
So, during the, like, she heard, like, imminent threat, right? And she's like, Jesus Christ. She went back to talk to some of the cooks who had been there for a hot minute, right? And she comes back to Julie and Garrett, and she's like, yeah, you guys. So, I was talking to Frank and Ben in the kitchen, and there was this one night where Nasir shows up with the host,
preserve
Satoshi.
Humanity.
And then
preserve humanity
with Trent. And then Trent and Satoshi get in this whole fist fight during prep the next morning, breaks a window, insane shit. And then Nasir just came in like the next week, like nothing was, like, it was just
the
back
what
of the water.
What the fuck
hole.
Are you talking about?
That's the
about?
Guy. That's the they fucking just said, guy.
They just said preserve humanity. Like there's a chance we don't make it. Are you seeing that? And I think you can see on his slate, he's like flipping through the documents that Nasir referenced.
I think at the same time, there's been like a plan released on like all the different things that the coordinated ICO and the governments are going to be doing. And I think Julie has pulled that up and she's like scrolling through. And I think she has a light in her eye for the first time in this scene. Mm. And it almost seems like she is driven.
I think maybe Garrett actually looks over and sees you looking at the plans. And I think he says, you knew about this, didn't you? You work for them.
I think Julie turns around and looks at him and says, he literally just explained that they've put out a plan.
A plan?
I wish I worked for them.
This is a plan? They said, could they preserve humanity? We're not going to make it.
I think Bernice takes her like dish rag and like whips it down on the bar in front of Garrett. And she's like, hey, man, collect yourself. Before this stupid announcement, you could have walked out of this bar and got hit by a car. And that was the end of your days. Now what? some sort of evil aliens are gonna come kill you. Okay. My question here is, do you want another round?
I think he had stood up at this point, is like looking really indignant. And I think he just shakes his head and then sits back down and
yeah, that's
taps
what I thought.
On the glass.
That's what I thought, my guy. I think she goes, oh, hey, looks like you got a notification there.
I think he looks at the slate and then kind of flicks it away. And I think he says, I think I just need to be by myself tonight.
Boo.
I think Julie is kind of distractedly looking at her slate and looks up for a second at Bernice and says, can I close out, please? And then she like looks back down, and I think we see on her slate she has started an application to transfer to the new division that's being established.
All righty then. I think Bernice takes a step back, and at this point, like, the environment of the bar has probably gone insane. So you probably, you know, like, zoom out, and there's people openly yelling at each other, crying, making out, like, all of the human emotions. And she steps on, like, it's just like a step stool behind the bar, and she goes, hey, everybody, world's gonna end or something? Free shots all around.
I feel like that's the scene, right?
I feel like that's the scene. Bernice the icon.
She stole your playbook and your ID.
Okay, so first of all, like, I did steal shit. He left his stuff. Also, he was kind of a menace in the bar, is what I was getting at. He was a menace on the streets.
What about the sheets?
Unclear.
Also there.
So I think now it's time for the legacy, and I'm the one that gets to pick for this round. And I think I want to make my legacy for this focus how humanity treats alien life now that we have met the Traveler and have learned about the Shepherds.
Oh, shit.
Very good.
And I think I'm going to put down a dictated scene. And the question that I'm going to answer in the scene is, why did humanity abandon the Brink?
Ooh.
And I think the setting is on a planet in the Brink. I need to think of a name for this. I don't have any backup planet names, unfortunately. Anyone have a planet name idea?
Pluto. New York.
But no, Pluto, but this time it's actually a planet.
I think I'll name it Pallas. P-A-L-L-A-S.
Oh, shit.
And I think the setting is the landing site where humanity has begun, or where human ships have begun to land on and populate the planet. And I think that what we see is humans in this scene running back to their ships, and the sound of gunfire. And I think we see bodies of several creatures that had themselves never before encountered alien life or considered the possibility of alien life. And I'm going to name those the Founders, since they were the ones that founded that planet. And I think that we see the ships lifting off and fleeing this planet. And the reason for that is to avoid this conflict that occurred when we went for the first time into a place that we had never been before, and with the people that never expected to encounter us.